The Blinders are one of the great young guitar bands that are emerging in the UK at the moment, giving me great optimism about the form. Their thrilling and firebrand live shows have been electrifying audiences up and down the country in the last year. And their debut album went into the top 20. Their political lyrics and the wide awake social conscience contrast sharply with bands from 10 years ago. In this interview, they talk about their band, their lyrics and their stance.
I think there's always been an urge to, what sort of word I'm looking for? Right, for the songs to be current and for the songs not to be just address the same sort of current matters which, you know, people have addressed before. I suppose like writing, you know, stereotypes about love, for example, was always something that we sort of shied away from, and that sort of felt like it wasn't really our territory. So in terms of sort of social, political sort of point of view of the band, that's just something sort of that is naturally sort of, we sort of naturally arrived at. And then, yeah, to try to hold a mirror up to what we see.
I mean, can you sort of talk through some of the issues and ideas that you sing about?
I suppose that one of the early songs, actually, when we moved to Manchester, we wrote a song called, which ended up being called Swine. And that was about the homelessness in Manchester, which was sort of not a new thing for us, but coming from Doncaster, it wasn't maybe much of an issue, I don't know if that's maybe fair, but going to Manchester was obviously so much more obvious. And much more bigger issue. So that was sort of one of the first maybe things moving to Manchester we started writing about. And I suppose looking at the album, I suppose Tom could touch on this as well. You know, when we started writing the album more, and when if you look at the album as a finished product, it's a much more broad theme. And I think talking about society in general, and not sort of pinpointing one issue or one event. We're trying to talk about things in a more sort of systematic and thematical sense.
Yeah, we sort of accidentally fell into it, what we, you know, eventually ended up writing about. We had all these songs that we had previously written, and then obviously everything built up to writing or putting together the first album. And we quickly realised that they sort of could be crowbarred into the same thematic sense, and that was because of what was going on at the time with the US election and the Brexit vote, and you know, just sort of horrifying stories on the news daily. It was hard not to sort of believe that you were a part of a failing world and a you know, failing society. So I think we then mirrored that in the album, and you know, perhaps that's one of the reasons why, you know, I think we don't really give any answers. We just hold up a mirror, if you like, and that's probably a bad thing, but it's just what comes out.
No, I think it's ideal. I don't think anybody expects a band to come up with the answers to all society's problems, but I think where rock and roll works best is either a celebration of being alive or just throwing out question marks for other people to answer.
Definitely.
So, I mean, if you're good to talk through, I mean, so it's not like each song's about a direct thing. I mean, that's so corny, isn't it? This one's about this one's about that. But are the themes like the eternal themes of questioning bounds? Is it the frustration, the alienation, just observational anger at what's there in front of you?
I think observation is a big part of it, yeah.
I think the sort of theme of power in general, I think, maybe was quite a big thing, you know, sort of maybe who holds power and how is power being used to maybe distort, you know, our lives or maybe oppress our lives, or, you know, and how are people maybe being manipulated by, you know, people at the top being manipulated, and how are they maybe using that to manipulate. I suppose, you know, looking at the, you know, sort of the Trump campaigns, the Brexit campaigns, so, you know, the sort of the fake news world, I suppose. So that sort of became quite a big sort of inspiration or a big sort of concern, if you like. So, again, you know, I suppose it's quite a big, you know, it's obviously a huge topic, you know, the topic of power, if you like. But that obviously spreads in so many different directions and raises so many questions in so many different situations.
I mean, how old are you now? Is it 21? What are your ages? It's slightly old. Is it 21, 22?
21, 22, yeah.
Yeah, so I mean, for your generation, what does the UK feel like? I mean, my generation, we've been through these battles over and over again. But what's it like looking at it from your age? I basically look at the mess that my generation has made of the world.
Yeah, I think it feels the exact same, really. All our all our lives, or all our political lives, which is obviously from 18 years old when we are legally allowed to vote, everything's gone the other way to what we voted for, it feels like. And although it, you know, there is obviously a you know, something else going on here. There's that feels like the majority of people our age vote this a very similar way to how we've voted, and we've never sort of seen any change here for the better for our generation. So there is clearly something else here that is affecting this, and it's hard not to be slightly ageist on the whole matter. But when you talk about yourself, then that just even raises more questions as to, you know, if there was a... it's interesting the demographic we get in our audiences, and there are a lot of old punks who still, you know, can resonate with the same anger and frustration that we're feeling. So it's an interesting one.
When you being in a band is I think it's a perfect way of gauging what people feel. So as you go around the country and you speak to a lot of people at the gigs, after gigs, before the gigs, what's the general vibe? Do people click in with what you're singing about, or are people very varied, or, you know,
most people are quite I think they're quite reluctant to talk about the politics of it. Because for some reason that's just you know, the type of vibe that people give off. But the people that do talk about it, you know, are obviously it means everything to them, and it sort of means everything to us. We can't see you know, don't understand why more people do not use a platform to talk about politics and to talk about reform and change and. But that's just the general vibe that I sort of get.
I mean, do you find, do you think after like five, six decades of sort of waves of political pop, and it goes in and out, do you find that people think maybe singing about it doesn't work? Or do you think it still really engages people? There's a way to get this message through somehow.
Well, I don't think that we ever saw ourselves you know, providing any change, and maybe this is the problem, but just by talking and giving conversation through music, surely that's better than, you know, just burying your head in the sand. I don't know, Charlie, what do you think?
I suppose, you know, what you come back to earlier, John, when you said, you know, about just asking questions, and I think maybe, like you say, we're not giving the answers or leading the movement in a way, in that sense, but by even, you know, providing a question, and maybe someone listens to the lyrics and, you know, and considers that question, maybe that's the sort of most the most sort of difference you can maybe hope to have through the lyrics, you know. I think especially when you talk about the shows as well, I think part of people obviously come to the shows and maybe get lost actually in the performance as well, which is sort of part of what we want to do as well, you know. So maybe the actual gigs, you maybe don't get across the actual politics as much as what you maybe could, or maybe what you should, I suppose. But yeah, I don't know. I think there's obviously a lot of apathy around at the moment. But then you've also got to say, you know, we all often get mentioned, you know, alongside bands such as Idols, you know, and Shame. And, you know, there's a lot of other bands at the moment doing a similar sort of thing, or trying to get a similar sort of message across. So maybe there's a bit more of a revival in that sense of bands willing to talk about these things again.
Yeah, and it's interesting you mention those bands, because I would argue this is the best time for like politically, socially engaged bands making really creative and interesting music. Since the punk period, you know, there's a whole raft of bands out there saying something, doing something. You know, it's kind of a measure, a reflection of how desperate these times are getting.
Well, maybe that's just what it is. Maybe we're just in sort of the worst times we've been since the sort of late 70s, 80s, you know, Maybe that is why, you know, I suppose, I don't know, I can kind of edit off the band of the 90s or early sort of noughties, but I suppose there's maybe a bit more aspiration, perhaps. You know, it's difficult to say because you wasn't really part of that generation, but it feels like you're sort of in a desperate time now, and that's obviously always bleeding to art, doesn't it, you know?
I mean, how much do the lyrics play into the music? Do they affect the way you make the music or think about the music?
The lyrics will always, 90% of the time come first. And yeah, we absolutely play up to the lyrics. I think the only reason why we are allowed to perform so largely out of our sort of personal comfort zones is because we can not hide behind these lyrics, but use these lyrics to sort of ascend to this, you know, these sort of crazy and eccentric performances that we've been now made known for, if you like. So definitely the lyrics have a huge part to do with the music, and then in turn the music came from that, and the aggressiveness, the darkness especially.
I mean, how much growing up in Doncaster informed you as people?
Doncaster was, I mean, we've not been in Doncaster now for 4 years, but regardless, Doncaster was, you know, a huge part in our lives. And, you know, we all had working class fathers, especially, who not necessarily, you know, would place their political sort of associations on us, but their views definitely bled towards us. And you can't help but share those views because of how Doncaster has evolved from the place it was in the 70s and 80s to the place it is, you know, now and since we've been growing up, which is, to be honest, you know, the life feels like it's almost been sucked out of it. So definitely on songs such as Orbit on Columbia, that, you know, always recalls us to imaginations of Doncaster. But yeah, as people, I think it was the cornerstone for our political values, definitely. We still come back here. So.
And how much being in Manchester affects you? Because Manchester is an amazing city, and it's a very open city, very progressive city, very modern city, but it's politically, it's savvy, it's great. And does that sort of play into your mindset? I mean, what a great place to come to when you're 17, and did it really open your minds, or was it you're already open-minded and that was just like an island of sanity to go and move to?
I still think that, you know, places and environment are, you know, completely paramount to, you know, learning and your views. And I mean, what, are we 21, 22? And so I don't, you know, imagine that, you know, the mind stops there. So, you know, we're completely open to, you know, that sort of thing. But yeah, Manchester was huge for us. And as you say, when you come over as a 17-year-old and suddenly you feel like you've had your eyes shut all your life, it's, you know, it really is a completely different world when you come from a town and then move to a, you know, a major city, especially a city which is almost the capital of the north. But yeah, as we said earlier, one of the first things that we started to develop when we moved to Manchester was, you know, engaging on political rights. And at first, we'd always shied away from it. And if it came as an accident, it came as an accident. But then we started to go out of our way to actually raise questions and raise views. And that was almost definitely to do with moving to Manchester and seeing with our own eyes, you know, a modern city.
And when the band plays live, it's an incredible performance. It's really intense. But it's also very theatrical, you know, with the face paints, etc. I mean, what are the ideas behind doing that?
The face paint was, you know, I don't think we've never really discussed it as a band, so I don't really think we even know what it means. But I can tell you the first time we did it, it was Deaf Institute for a particularly important gig, and we wanted to do something different, and frankly, we wanted to, you know, scare some people, if you like. So we donned this face paint on, and it just really worked. It just allowed, you know, you'd be amazed as what you can sort of perform as and become, if you like, just because your face is covered up with paint. And that then allowed you know, a character to blossom on stage as opposed to just singing these songs. And I think that's anyone does that in their own different way, but that's definitely our way to do it, to wear this paint. And I imagine we want to move on for it soon, but for the time being, you know, that's just how we get by on stage, if you like.
Yeah,
it's hard to explain because
You take on a persona. You take on a persona, basically.
Definitely, yeah.
Yeah. I mean, it's interesting because modern British indie bands, and it's, this is not really criticism because it's okay, but don't really, they're not this, there's a lack of flamboyance, you know, it's very dressed down, sports casual, etc. You've kind of gone the other way, haven't you? It's always been a flamboyant, sort of almost slight tinge of glam in the sense of what you do on stage.
Yeah, it is interesting that this sort of surge of like you say, dressing down and streetwear on stage. And I mean, I can't relate to people wearing Adidas trainers on stage. That was just fucking weird. But yeah, I don't know, the whole glam sort of flamboyance, as you say, it's, I imagine that comes from a lot of our key influences, such as Zeppelin, such as Bowie, and Floyd, for example, and even some of the Peter Gabriel stuff. You know, it's, I don't know, it just feels natural, and yeah, I've never really thought about it too much.
I mean, was that your background? There were interesting influences to mention. I guess that was the parents' record collections.
Yeah, sort of. It was a mix of two, wouldn't you say, Charlie? It was, you know.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, obviously those bands you referenced there were all kind of artists got us introduced by his parents. And then I suppose, you know, we later sort of got into that, you know, that early sort of noughties indie scene. But some of his parents, I think, are still into now, actually, and still sort of go to gigs and listen to the same sort of music. So first that sort of collective thing there, and obviously then you sort of start knocking about, don't you, people, you know, like ourselves who listen to similar sort of music, and we obviously expand your music taste, but that original sort of grounding in, you know, maybe the classics.
I often think this, if you're 21, 22, how do you create your own space with all this weight of rock history? You know, you're talking about the classics already. I mean, when I was growing up, it was there, but everyone used to rebel against it, etc. But now, the dead weight of rock history, how do you make a space in all that to be yourselves?
I think, to be honest, I think when we sort of grew up, you could say like being a Led Zeppelin fan when you was maybe, well, I don't know, when we was secondary school, but it was probably it was quite jealous, as it, you know, it was, I suppose we didn't really have anything to musically to, I suppose pop music is the, you know the X Factor in that kind of scene was the biggest thing to rebel against. So those sort of bands were sort of welcomed by, I suppose, all of us. And that's probably quite fair.
I mean, what about bands of your own generation? Was it gateway bands that made you realise that you didn't have to be from the 70s to make music?
Yeah, I mean, the Arctic Monkeys, I think, was sort of our way into making our own music, if you like. I think before we'd had an intense love for these classical rock bands, as you say, are in your mother and father's record collection. But when a contemporary band at the time, such as Arctic Monkeys, came about and, you know, really blew up, I think anyone of our age and a little older would be, you know, they'd be slightly dishonest to themselves if they were not in some way influenced by Alex Turner's Arctic Monkeys. So, yeah, the kitchen sink lyricism and, you know, classic indie lineup, I think, is very important for the music that exists now. It's you know, borderline indie punk, if you like, which is an awful thing to say. It kind of makes my mouth feel dirty, but that's certainly what it feels like.
I mean, yeah, I mean, was it the fact they also came from the north? They came from Sheffield. It's pretty close to where you grew up. This idea that you could actually come from there and make your own music and be a world beater as well.
Yeah, I mean, I think at first we tended to shy away from the relation with the Arctic Monkeys, probably because that was the only band that was doing something. And if you were from Sheffield or Doncaster or Leeds, you would then say, oh, well, they sound like the Arctic Monkeys. So I think, you know, having now talked to you about this, we sort of start to realise why we went so left field with all the performance. I think that was to completely reject the sort of typical indie band, and then comes the face paint and comes the Cuban heels and you know the rest of the story. So.
It's interesting you took that route, because most people would take the other route, wouldn't they? But you know, you almost took a route that makes life harder for yourself, but it worked, didn't it?
Yeah, I think ever since I've been a kid, I've always craved for attention. So, yeah, maybe there's some serious, some of that going on. Probably need to see a psychiatrist, to be honest. But, I mean, there you go.
Once the Arctic Monkeys had opened a door for you and you realise, I mean, all those classic rock bands, of course, are great. Floyd, Zepp, the reason why they're classic is because they are classic. But once the Arctic Monkeys had opened the door, absolutely, did you see there's a whole other world and of other bands out there, other influences? And if so, what kind of bands were you kind of introduced to next?
I think it was Charlie that had a lot of, then took the next step and started putting bands on the plate, such as Nick Cave. And I mean, you can list a few bands, Chaz, that, you know, you sort of introduced us to. And...
Yeah, I mean, Arcade Fire, quite a big one, I mean. I suppose, yeah, The Bad Seed and then the sort of spin-offs, I suppose, from them. And I don't know, off the top of your head, the list of them, listen to it. You know, I think even trying to take influence from, you know, bands who would, you know, couldn't, nothing really like us, bands like Radiohead, for example. Looking at the, you know, like looking at the ethos of great artists, you know, people just want to kind of create. So are willing to, I think bands who are always willing to change was always a big influence. So, you know.
Yeah, because it's... One of the great things about what you do musically, there is, it's got a dark edge to it. It's, there's a sparseness and a dark edge. So I guess I can sort of hear The Bad Seeds in there somewhere, but it's not obvious. It's in there. It's in the mix. So, I mean, were you drawn into more darker sounds?
I think just given the nature of the lyrics that we were writing at the time, there had to be some sort of sound that could couple with that. I think the Witches, who were on the scene at the time, were quite heavily, we were certainly heavily influenced in, with guitar tones, and that then allowed us to explore that area. But, you know, naturally you become attracted to an idea, and then, as you say, you see your own world in that hole in the paper and just take a dive down it and see where it leads you, and Columbia is what we got out of it, really. So,
I mean, with the current scene of really good bands that we talked about before, what's your relationship with those bands? I mean, obviously you can lump all these bands together. They don't. I mean, it's a spurious nature of scenes, isn't it? Because the bands didn't plan all to be in a scene. They all came from different directions and ended up with the same audience, not even the same sound. But with these kind of bands, you play them sometimes. I mean, is it quite a cozy relationship, or is it quite a distant relationship?
I think that it still feels quite distant. Unless you're label mates with other bands, you definitely still feel some sort of not rivalry, that's the wrong word, but you know, you're certainly all sort of rubbing shoulders to try and so it's, I don't know, I mean, Cabbage were the ones who really took us under their wing, and we sort of owe the start of our careers in Manchester to Cabbage, simply for just championing us as, you know, how they did. So, but I definitely think that there is something going on at the moment, but not the same sort of scenes of the 60s where, you know, they'd all jump on each other's records. That's just because they were all rich and shared the same drugs and stuff.
I mean... Apart from Cabbage, is any of the bands you sort of have a close relationship with or an empathy with, where you might not know them, but you feel they're working in the same kind of area?
Yeah, I think Manchester naturally is like that, especially, you know, I mean, we're musicians, if you like, so what we do from a day-to-day basis is write and watch and you know, just completely absorb ourselves in music. You know, the reason why we're allowed to have such a extensive knowledge, if you like, of music is because all we do is listen to it. So, but yeah, you, in Manchester, you go to see all the local bands and you very quickly become friends with them. So Manchester attracted bands such as Strange Bones, Avalanche Party, White Room, who are not necessarily from Manchester, but obviously it's a hub that you stop off at. And I think that was a huge part in our lives, if you like, with moving to Manchester. Everyone plays there. So naturally you have the opportunity to see almost every band, and that was huge for us, I think.
I mean, so you don't get involved in any of these kind of Sleaford Mods versus Idols kind of beefs. It's more about disparate acts, but it's good to feel some kind of unity there, right?
Yeah, I can't relate to any sort of battles on Twitter and stuff like that. I don't understand all of that. I think that's just jealousy in a lot of parts. But I just can't understand that.
Yeah. Take it to the Tories, not to each other, I think.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely.
So where does it go next? You got the album out, you're established. It's a top 20 album, wasn't it? So it's a big level cult band. But I'd imagine
it went in the alternative. I think it was top 10, and then I think we'd just gone shy of 50 for the Billboard. So, but yeah, we were incredibly proud with what we achieved. So.
No, it's great. I mean, for the band doing your kind of music, it's a big cult band now. You'll sell out the Ritz, 1,500 in Manchester, great. But I imagine you're more ambitious than that, aren't you? I think I get the feeling that with the message you've got, what you're trying to do, with a live show as good as that, song as good as that, there's got to be more for the blinders, hasn't there?
Absolutely. I don't think we have any intention of stopping there. And I think it's quite common with debut albums nowadays, as opposed to breaking the mould, if you like, or not breaking the mould, but, shooting out to the stratosphere. Debut albums feel like it gives yourself a platform and allows yourself to, like you say, establish yourself and, tell the world what you're about, I suppose. So you can only then develop from that. It's nice to know that Dylan's album never sold any. Dylan's first album never sold any good, so comforting. If you.
I mean, when you say develop, where you think you take? Have you started working on new songs now? Is there a direction as well?
So it feels like we're about halfway to three quarters of the way through finishing the material for the second album. So we'll be ready to take it into the studio around autumn time this year. So that's the initial plan, but we're very happy with the way that we're taking things. And a lot of this nowadays is just a waiting game because we don't have the opportunity to go into a studio tomorrow with an unlimited amount of money and an unlimited amount of time, which would be amazing. But yeah, it doesn't work like that, does it? So no. It's going to take a little time, but I think we're ready to move on and just progress as musicians and artists.
And musically and lyrically, have you got any sense of the direction it's going in, or is this still really early days?
No, I think we always say to ourselves, never try and set a theme. Allow that theme to just come to you naturally. That's how it happened with Columbia. And so with this, things are starting to fall into place into a little more personal aspects and characterised stories. So we've sort of noticed that each song is developing a singular character with a twisted mindset. So very Bad Seed-esque lyrically, but musically, it's going to go two ways. I think it's going to be some of the same and some that's progressed quite far into maybe, the sort of, I don't know, it's hard to explain. I don't want to give away too much.
No, that's cool. It's nice to know. Sounds like a good direction.
Yeah, I think we're definitely focused on the direction. We know where we're going with it. So it's just a matter of time, really, John.
You have been listening to the John Robb Tapes with me, John Robb. Brought to you by Lush and Louder Than War. If you enjoy this, please retweet it and tell your mates. Thanks for listening.